Welcome to the latest episode of the All Clear to Travel podcast. I'm Gary Nelson, Head of Corporate Affairs at All Clear. In this series of podcasts, we'll be talking to industry experts and people involved in travel to get their perspectives on some of the major issues shaping the travel insurance industry today. This week, we're going to be looking at All Clear's research on non-disclosure. We'll explore why this happens, the risks involved, and how common misunderstandings can leave holidaymakers vulnerable when things go wrong. I'm joined today by Mandy Langfield, Director of Publishing at ITIJ, a publication that covers the global travel and health insurance industry. Mandy has interviewed a wide range of experts across the sector and brings a deep understanding of the key issues facing both insurers and consumers. Today, she'll be sharing her perspective on the challenges around non-disclosure, how communication gaps contribute to misunderstandings, and what steps the industry can take to help holidaymakers make informed decisions and secure the right cover. Well, it's great to have you here, Mandy. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Before we go any further, you've worked in this particular industry as a journalist for some years, it's fair to say. So what I'm interested in, and I'm sure our listeners will be as well, is kind of what attracted you to journalism and why specifically into a sort of more of a trade journalistic slant than a sort of consumer, public-facing consumer slant.
Okay, sure. Well, I mean, I just wanted to get paid for writing. I did an English degree at university, and what they don't tell you at the end of an English degree is that it doesn't qualify you for anything. You've then got to go and train to be a teacher or go and do another degree in something else. But right. I really wanted to just write for a living. I didn't really want to stay and do another degree in journalism, so I thought, well, I'll go and work for free.
Right.
So, well, for free. I worked all hours God gave in a bar to earn enough money to move down to Bristol so that I could then offer my services to a publishing company for almost no money, which is what I did. I found Voyager, and my mum actually worked as an insurance broker for many, many years. So I understood the world of insurance and I could instantly relate to it. And I think a lot of young aspiring writers would kind of look at an insurance publication and go, what? I don't even understand. Yeah, I don't understand the jargon. I don't understand the industry. I don't understand consumer needs and rights and wants. And whereas I walked in and went, yeah, okay, I get it. Yeah. And I related to the content. I mean, travel is, I think, one of the most interesting parts of insurance, general insurance, because there's such a human element to it.
Yeah.
You know, people are hurt or injured abroad and they need help. And the travel insurance industry is this incredible network of professionals that leap into action at any moment for anybody that needs their help. And it's really interesting to be a part of, and it's great to be able to share in the pride that the industry has in what they do. So that's what I love about it.
Yeah,
really.
I mean, what's very evident is your passion and enthusiasm for it, even after this amount of time. And I guess that a lot of people would think that it's not the sexiest subject in the world, talking about travel insurance and policy wordings and so on and so forth. But as you said, again, very eloquently, that there's a whole different facet to it, which sits behind the support that's given out there.
Exactly. And we see that all the time. We hold an awards ceremony every year, and the pride that people have in what they do and what their companies do for people, the people that actually need the policies, is incredible. And we are proud to be a part of that.
Where do you think the disconnect is then? Because clearly that's kind of not what the public perception is of travel insurance, is it? It's kind of like, I'll pay this money and I don't think you're going to pay out. And you find every way that you can to get out of paying, which we know in the industry isn't the case. It's far more complicated. And as we'll talk about later, the sort of non-disclosure element becomes even more important. But there does seem to be this disconnect between what we think is the correct case in the industry, that we provide a great product, we provide a great avenue for people to be able to travel overseas with peace of mind, some of whom live with hugely complex medical conditions, but can get the right level of cover.
Yeah.
And this, you know, don't really trust the travel insurance industry, per se. There seems to be this strange disconnect, in my opinion.
There is. And for me, it comes down to people generally not understanding the product that they're buying. Their expectations of what travel insurance can do and should do are way up here. And the reality is often sort of here-ish, depending on how much money they're willing to spend on the policy. And I think the money is a big issue, because I think in general people understand that you get what you pay for in this world. If you buy a top of the range TV or a top of the range fridge or laptop, you're going to get better outcomes.
Yeah.
But they think that the same is not true when they buy insurance. And it's really odd that they expect gold level quality of cover, but they're paying £6 at the supermarket checkout because it's the last minute thing that they think about. And they don't place the right importance on understanding that this is about their health. It's not just about their baggage, and it's not just about cancellation, although those are very, very important parts and benefits of a travel insurance policy. But this is their health. If something goes wrong to you or your child or your partner when you're abroad, what value are you placing on that? And I think that's where the disconnect comes in quite often, is they're not spending the right amount of money because they don't understand the value of the product that they're buying.
I think I can completely concur with what you say, but I think the other thing that we see, particularly in the consumer press, is it doesn't make particularly great headlines, an insurer saying, oh, we've paid out, somebody has had a problem. What does make particularly strong headlines is when the opposite happens, when companies don't pay out without actually understanding all the ramifications behind that. I mean, one of the big things that we've seen from our recent research is a prevalence of people under-declaring their medical conditions. Mm-hmm. Have you got a view on, have you seen that yourselves, or have you come across that, or have you got a view on why that might be?
I mean, yes, we have seen lots of research to back up those findings. People are not declaring. Why are they not declaring? Well, I mean, there's people that are willfully misleading their insurer. They don't want to pay a higher price for their premium, so they just go, I'm not going to tell them that I'm on this medicine, or that I saw a doctor for this condition, because they know that their premium will go up.
Right.
I think they do understand that. Their premium is loaded if they have more medical conditions. But there's also, I think, an increase in people partially declaring. So they might want to say they've got one thing but not another. So they've been sort of honest, and they will see that as being sort of honest. They don't know that if they mess with that medical declaration system, the computer knows that they're doing that, and the insurer can go back and check to see what they declared and then what they decided not to later on. But then there's also the people that might be more vulnerable. So the vulnerable customers that may not fully understand their condition. The doctor maybe didn't explain it to them properly, or maybe the doctor did, but they didn't quite understand the nuances of what that condition was and what it means. They might not know the name of their medication.
Yeah.
Or they might be taking 6 or 7 medications and not actually remember every single one when it comes to that moment of declaring. And also you've got the difference between physical illness and physical conditions that people are not declaring, and then the incidence of mental health conditions that people need to and should be declaring. There might be issues with accessibility. They might not understand that they need to declare. They might not understand how to fill in that form, because for some people it can be quite straightforward, that medical declaration, when you get sent down the medical screening route. But I think for other people, they might find it really, really difficult, and they might not genuinely know how to answer those questions. So the question of why aren't people declaring is, it's complex. Yeah, it's nuanced.
I think it's complex, and I think it's also got more complex as a result of the cost of living crisis. So people generally we've seen across the board huge increases in holidays generally, flights.
Oh, yeah. Holidays are so expensive now. Yeah,
it's just an emphasis on kind of where do you put your money?
Are
you,
sure.
we would quite rightly say you need to make sure that you can get the cover that you need in each individual case.
Yeah.
But
the Aussies have it right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you can't afford the insurance, you can't afford to travel.
Yeah. And we do see, particularly in our market, which we're dealing with sort of definitely with medical conditions, but also with older people, so a lot of vulnerable people, we do see that there is a tendency to understand that better than perhaps a younger audience. And I guess one of the areas where it's probably become a little bit easier, not to game the system, but to not necessarily fully declare everything, is probably in the online environment where there aren't quite so much stringent checking as if you were talking directly to somebody in a contact centre, for example. But you've already alluded to the fact that when it comes to serious claims or any kind of claim, really, there is a check process that the underwriters will go through. And if there is serious sort of shortcomings in the declaration, then that will get found out and that will impact the claim. So it is it's a penny-wise, pound-foolish strategy, but, you can understand why. The area of mental health has become particularly prominent, I think, in more recent times, quite rightly. I think an awful lot of people have suffered or living with mental health issues, particularly as a direct, let's face it, as a direct result of something that we've not been through before, like the global pandemic.
Absolutely. The consumer kind of perception is awry on that one, because I think the industry has made huge progress. So 18 years ago, I was trying to take out insurance and declared anxiety, because that's what I had a diagnosis for. And I had to go down many, many routes to try and find the right insurance, any insurer.
Yeah.
Most of them just went, computer says no. And I think that if I did the same thing now, I would be hugely impressed at how many insurers go, yep, no problem.
Yeah.
Are you on any sort of medication? Great. Is it well controlled? Have you seen a doctor? Have you seen a psychiatrist? Have you been hospitalized? No. Great. You're fine.
Yeah.
But I do think that there obviously consumers need to understand more, but I think doctors also could do more to help their patients. Perhaps if they know they're going on holiday, they could say, you need to declare this, and this is what you need to declare. So a bit more assistance from the medical profession could really help customers be more informed about what they need to declare and the fact that it is covered as well.
Yeah, I think again, in defence of the industry, if it's a situation where it does come to a claim, there are understandable reasons why somebody may have inadvertently declared something.
Yes.
I don't think the industry, personally, from my experience, is there trying to find
reasons to
do
that.
I don't think that at all. Yeah. I think it's far more in a situation where there's been a problem, medical conditions flared up, which is specific to a previously diagnosed medical condition that hasn't been declared in the medical declaration, and then people are surprised when the insurer says, no, I'm sorry, but this is a direct consequence of an incident that's happened before.
Yes.
You haven't declared that fact, and therefore your claim is invalidated. And as I said, I don't think the insurance industry there is there to trip people up. I think it's there to help people. So it's great to hear you say that the accessibility element of it is far greater than it was 20 years ago. I mean, our industry, our business was set up by somebody who had exactly the same issue, that they had a medical condition, I think 25 years ago now, and surprise, surprise, they couldn't find cover anywhere.
Yeah.
So being a business person as they were at the time, they thought that needs to be sorted out, that needs to be overcome, and they set up All Clear as a business. And, from that point forward, we've only ever covered medical conditions and people who can't find that level of cover. So that accessibility, the British Insurance Brokers Association, BIBA, have got their specialist directory now.
Signposting's made a massive difference.
Yeah. And I'm sure, again, you've been covering these developments as you've gone, because, they are worthy elements within the travel insurance industry.
They are.
That are trying to help people and to make improvements.
Yeah, they are. And do you know what? Because we are a global publication, ITIJ looks at the travel insurance sector of countries all over the world. And it's really interesting to see how quite often the British insurance industry is a little bit further ahead. They're trying harder to meet the needs of customers. And I think customer expectations are higher in this country. But I do feel like our ability as an industry to adapt and evolve is really strong, and we can continue to do better and to lessen that gulf, as we've said, between the expectation of what consumers have of the insurance industry and what the reality is of what they are buying. There are a lot of consumer advocacy groups that I think the insurance industry could still engage with more, because I think insurers get a fair bit of criticism in the consumer media from certain organisations that push, rightly or wrongly, the agenda of their partners, and saying, oh, well, the member of my charity, their premium went up £400 because they had a cancer diagnosis 2 years ago. But it's too simplistic to say that.
Yeah.
So the insurers need to engage more with these charitable organisations. And same is true for BIBA, and same is true for the ABI as well. There needs to be more cohesive discussions to improve understanding among these consumer and advocacy groups and conditions that are sometimes specifically triggered by travel as well. You know, we've got to think about the fact that, coming back to mental health conditions, they are quite often massively exacerbated by a very stressful travel experience. And that's not to say that every travel experience is stressful, but traveling to an airport, going through security, what if you're late for your flight? Then you've got going to a country where you don't speak the language. You might have gone to a country where the culture is incredibly different. Mm. And all of these stresses can really exacerbate illnesses.
Yeah, I think I can completely concur. And the expectation level, obviously, we all expect our holiday to be smooth. We all expect it to be wonderful. And we look forward to it for a long period of time in many instances.
Especially as it's so expensive now.
And everybody understands that the cost and the value that you get from a holiday. But if it doesn't deliver to your expectations, or it actually turns out to be a really bad experience, then you can see that those stress levels are going to go through the roof.
But,
one of the other areas of our research which shows is the fact that we have a wonderful NHS service. We get our treatment provided to us for free. But people's expectations when they travel abroad, or even their understanding of kind of what costs might be incurred, just people have just got no kind of preconception at all. I think generally people have got an understanding about the States.
It gets enough publicity.
But I don't, you know, very close to the States is Canada. Very close to the States is the Caribbean. Mm. Very close to the States is Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, all of those places are tourist destinations to a lesser or greater degree. Caribbean in particular for the cruise market.
Yes.
But people have got no perception whatsoever about what the health facilities are like, what the costs might be.
Or if they think they can cover their medical bills if they were.
Yeah, well, our research has shown that plenty of people think they can, and our experience is no, they can't. So if they're thinking, I won't get travel insurance because I can cover the costs, I don't know that that's going to be the case in many instances, certainly from what we see.
No, it's a real problem, and that comes down to consumer education. And I think that's not just the insurance industry's responsibility, because it almost might look like you're sort of scaremongering them into buying insurance. Like, you're not. You're trying to educate them, but it can come across that way when people have this perception that insurers are the big bad wolf anyway.
Yeah.
So we don't want to make that any worse, but the government could really help. So the FCDO are actually working really hard at the moment to educate consumers about the need for travel insurance and to declare all their medical conditions. The cost of medical care abroad has to be part of that conversation, so that people understand that it's not just the States where you're going to get billed £5,000, £10,000 for some scans, some diagnostic tests, a visit to see, let's say, three different doctors and a nurse.
Yeah.
And then if you're really ill, What about a week in the ICU in a Florida hospital?
Yeah.
I mean, tens and tens of thousands. It's terrifying. But so that needs to happen. So, and that's a multi kind of disciplinary approach to get that message out there of how expensive it is. As you say, Canada, Mexico, the Caribbean, problematic, particularly if your cruise ship decides to offload you in a less than convenient location. And not only do you need medical care, you need an air ambulance evac to get to Florida. And then the costs really ramp up. But thinking about where most British tourists go, it's still Europe. And the cost of medical care in Europe is going up just as quickly as it's going up everywhere else, if not quicker. I wrote an article a few weeks ago about medical inflation, and actually it's sort of stabilised in the US. Obviously, their costs are generally higher, but their rate of inflation has stabilised. Europe and Asia as well are going up much more quickly. So the cost of medical care is increasing, and those, particularly places like Spain and France, they need to protect their own healthcare systems. They can't be allowing people to come in and abuse their healthcare systems. They need to protect it. They need people to have travel insurance.
Yeah.
And there, even if you have travel insurance, you're still going to pay something.
I think that's the misconception people have, because, again, the research is telling us that the number of people who are not taking out travel insurance for what they consider to be close by destinations has gone up 20% in the last 2 years from our tracking survey. And this misconception about what GHIC will deliver for them with the
let's talk about GHIC.
Yes, let's please do.
Global. Is it global? No, it is not. Is it insurance? No, it is not. It is a health card, and it allows you to access discounted healthcare in certain countries.
In their defence, they will argue that they actually put very prominently that it's no substitute to travel insurance
but we've got the people not reading the warnings.
Well, yeah, that awareness.
They see the headline,
yeah.
The global health insurance card. They don't read all of the warnings underneath it.
And certainly our statistics are telling us that people are thinking that they can rely on that as an adequate cover level. And we both know that isn't the case, but we'll have to keep banging that drum and trying to get that message across, and obviously working in the journalistic area. You and your colleagues can carry on banging that drum. I know they will.
We try.
It is a concern, particularly when you have medical conditions, that there is a misconception about what will happen if you end up in hospital or an ITU unit in Turkey or Greece or in Spain, even, where most Brits still tend to head. But
Your global health insurance card is not going to pay for that in a private hospital, and nor is it going to pay for your repatriation.
Yeah.
That's a huge part.
Yeah, repatriation is an element that people don't necessarily consider. We need to clarify here that some repatriation is done by medical escort.
On a commercial airline.
On a commercial airline. Yep. The more extreme cases are air ambulances out, and in even more extreme cases where conditions are very serious, they have to fly at lower levels with decompression, which uses up a lot more fuel and therefore needs stopping.
It's even more expensive.
So we've seen air repatriation costs coming into the hundreds of thousands now from certain destinations. So people thinking that GHIC is going to cover that cost, for example, is a well misconstrued in their assessment.
Yes.
But I mean, I know from your own publications that you get well involved in global assistance discussions and highlight the great work that those people do. What other things are you seeing as sort of trends, emerging trends? I mean, we talked earlier with the FCDO about cosmetic travel for operations. Have you done any articles recently on that? Or
so, yes, we have covered the issue of people travelling for treatment specifically. It's an interesting one because as far as the travel insurer is concerned, they're not going to cover any part because you are specifically travelling for treatment. There is an insurer out there that has brought a policy out that will cover the travel part of your trip, but not the medical, and hoping that, firstly, your medical treatment's going to be okay, but secondly, that if it's not, your facility will sort out any post-operative complications and that kind of thing. So it is hugely popular. It's a growing market. And I mean, there's a lot of quite scary stories out there about things going wrong and people dying from post-operative complications. It's also hugely expensive for the NHS putting right the issues that people are experiencing when they get back. But it's difficult to counter a lot of very positive PR that is available on the internet from people, influencers, saying that they had a wonderful experience getting their new hair or their new teeth or their new boobs or whatever. So any medical procedure is not without its risk. So people are going in perhaps a bit naively.
Yeah, it's definitely a growing issue. I mean, it's been raised to us about, you know, what do you do and what's your, and we are as the industry is at the moment, it's too risky an area for us. Particularly that when, you know, none of us are sure really what the medical facility that's offering the procedure, you know, who are the doctors? Are they fully qualified?
Exactly.
What's their, you know, what's the whole setup like there? And, you know, don't know. So too many don't knows for a travel insurance provider there.
It becomes a very hard no.
Yeah,
because insurance is all about facts. Yeah. It's you deal with that data and you get your risk matrix and then you have your score.
Yeah.
But there are too many unknowns. But there's a possibility, I think, to look at how the medical assistance industry can share knowledge. You know, they have these global network in some cases of hospitals in certain countries. So they will know the doctors, they will know the hospitals. So it could be that there's a possibility for a really quality network
of approved
providers that the insurers know and trust.
Yeah.
They might be accredited. There's a mark of quality there that you will be able to then score that risk accordingly in the future. I don't think it's quite there yet, but it's something that the industry could look to do to evolve further.
Well, it's like everything else, isn't it? If there's a growing emerging trend, there's going to be a growing emerging market, which is either there to be developed or that the industry has to adapt and has to create products to suit. But there will need to be those safety blankets in place of kind of, you know, as you rightly said, having an accredited facility that the procedures are well documented as being successful, very few instances of any issues, so absolutely, that reassurance. But I mean, I'm sure it's a subject that will crop up again and again, and I'm sure you're still covering the advances. We're certainly getting answers. We're still certainly getting asked the questions from consumers.
Right.
We're certainly getting asked the questions from people like the FCDO.
Yes.
What cover is available? You're an industry expert. Where's it going on this? The ability to adapt to emerging trends markets has been something that the industry's done very successfully, I think,
absolutely,
over time.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see where that one goes.
I think it's going to take a while, I think, for the industry to gather enough data and be confident that they can offer the right policies and, again, meet those customer expectations, because the last thing we want is to bring a new raft of policies out that actually don't offer the cover that consumers think that they do.
Yeah.
We need to be constantly thinking about how we can close that gap.
We've covered an awful lot of ground there. Well, you've clearly got great enthusiasm and energy for the industry, which is wonderful to see. So you're involved in travel. You write passionately about travel. But just on a human note, on a lighter note, you would have done hopefully lots of travel because you work in travel.
I'm lucky enough to do a lot of travelling for work and occasionally get a holiday with my family. Yeah,
excellent. So talk to us about that a second. Where's sort of high on the hit list, or where have you been that you think, well, that's just amazing?
Oh, I really enjoyed Marrakesh this year. That was absolutely fantastic. It's a beautiful city. I want to go and see more of Morocco.
Right.
Definitely. I mean, like most Brits, I've been to Spain a lot. I actually lived in Madrid for a year when I was a student and completely fell in love with Madrid as a city. I almost love Barcelona as much. It's a wonderful place. It kind of has everything that Madrid has, but with a beach.
Yeah.
So that's really wonderful. I'm going back to Istanbul next year, which will be, it'll be probably 12 or 15 years since the last time I went. So I'm really looking forward to going back and seeing how the city has changed. I stay fairly safe on family holidays because I have young children.
Yeah.
And long haul travel is not something that I want to do with a toddler. that's going to be a little while coming. Maybe that's one for a mum and dad trip in a few years. So we've stuck to Europe. Yeah. For us, for the last few years with the kids, it's easy enough speaking Spanish and kind of getting by. Mallorca's a safe bet, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a nice place as well.
It's lovely.
I completely relate to your experience in Marrakesh. I thought that was a wonderful city to visit, particularly in the old quarter there.
Getting lost in the souks.
Yeah, in the souks. Yeah. Getting run over by scooter drivers.
It's quite
barrows,
scary.
Yeah, but it's fascinating. Yeah. It was kind of the real experience I wanted from, which you don't get in places like Dubai and Abu Dhabi and so on.
No,
and so
Dubai
forth.
was, it's a funny one. I didn't feel like I saw much of it because it was so hot that you have to kind of get into an air-conditioned hotel and then you get into an air-conditioned taxi to go to your air-conditioned restaurant and then back. We did a trip into the desert when we were in Dubai and it was really cool. We did the sort of 4x4 dune trip.
I hope your travel insurance covered you for that particular.
Yes, it did. It did, honestly. Yeah.
Which is another point, isn't it? I mean, what you get up to on holiday and some of the more extreme things that people want to do, we should just also add that you need to make sure those sort of things are covered as well.
Please read your terms and conditions.
Yeah.
I've got a friend who works in our company, and he's admitted to doing all sorts of things like cage diving with sharks in South Africa and skydiving here and doing a bungee jump there. And you just kind of see the insurers going, oh my God, I don't want you on my books.
Please check. It's been a lovely conversation. I've really enjoyed it. Your enthusiasm and passion for your industry is very, very evident. So it's been a great pleasure talking to you today, Mandy. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. It's lovely to talk to you.
Yeah.